The next aspect of the survey discussed by the faculty was selection of patients with ER-positive tumors for the use of chemotherapy, and specifically the role of the Oncotype DX assay in this process. 90% of the faculty and 70% of the practicing surgeons would likely use this assay in a 60-year-old woman with a 1.3 centimeter ER-positive, HER2-negative, node-negative tumor, and Dr. Pegram began the discussion.
This is clearly one of the most challenging issues in all of medical oncology, is how to manage the node-negative patient with regard to the use of systemic adjuvant chemotherapy. And until the advent of technologies such as the multiplex PCR Oncotype DX assay, all we had were clinical guidelines to make these kinds of decisions. And of course, Peter had very important online algorithms to also estimate relative recurrence risk, which are extremely valuable in the modern era. But until those tools were available, Oncotype DX and Adjuvant Online, it was really difficult to segregate patients who truly would derive a benefit from those who don't need chemotherapy at all. And consequently, there was a lot of overtreatment. In my estimation, there's no doubt about that fact. And the biggest benefit of Oncotype DX since its inception is the more judicious use of systemic adjuvant chemotherapy for small ER-positive, node-negative tumors.
We actually did a survey 12 years ago of American medical oncologists, asking them what the prognosis was of stage one patients, various patient scenarios. And what we found was that there was a very wide divergence or spectrum of answers. And I think that tools like adjuvant, amongst other things, have narrowed and gotten rid of really the wildly inaccurate answers. I think it is important to think about these things in numerical terms, because without thinking about things in numerical terms, but just thinking qualitatively about it, you can't really make any estimates of the balance of the benefits versus the risks of therapy. So looking at it, it's actually impressive that the average surgeon is actually making a fairly good estimate of what patient's prognosis is and actually has a realistic view of what the benefits are that are being delivered by adjuvant therapy. It's been gratifying to see the Oncotype assays studies be presented, because they've really been consistent and provided a very strong picture of how good this assay is. Basically, what they've shown is repeatedly that it's a very strong prognostic factor, and that low versus high in the Oncotype 21 gene assay really distinguishes patients with several fold difference in prognosis. So if you were just using that alone, it would be a very powerful prognostic factor. But the other thing that's emerged is a very consistent picture that the patients who have low Oncotype scores also are not benefiting from adjuvant chemotherapy. So the test seems to be both a test that's prognostic, and I should emphasize that that's been developed and really validated in node-negative patients who are ER-positive, who are also going to be receiving hormonal therapy. But it also appears to be a test that's of great value in identifying patients who don't seem to benefit much in terms of the proportional bite that chemotherapy takes out of the recurrence risk. And so when you put those two together, you can see why things like the NCCN guidelines are suggesting that if you're node negative and if you have a low Oncotype score, you're not a candidate for chemotherapy.
Pat, what about the issue of who orders it or who should make the decision?
I really believe very strongly the surgeon should be ordering this test. Now, if the surgeon forgets to order it or slow somehow, maybe the medical oncologist should order it when the patient shows up. But let me tell you what happens. The patient shows up at the medical oncologist, and she has been suffering not only because she's worried about her cancer, but because she doesn't know what's going to happen to her. And she is really, really wanting to know what is going to happen to me. And that medical oncologist looks at her, and he's conflicted, or she's conflicted. Because on the one hand, if you look at patterns of use of Oncotype, it changes what gets done about 30% of the time, but maybe 70% it doesn't. And the medical oncologist is looking that woman in the eye, and she or he can see that woman is going to go through the roof if she says, let's wait a couple more weeks and then we'll decide. So she says, you know, I kind of get this right 70% of the time. Anyway, I think we'll just go ahead. This is a sort of a low-risk situation. And they really will be right most of the time, but some of the time they're going to miss a chance to give chemotherapy that would be life-saving to someone that might not otherwise get it. and vice versa. So just like surgeons order ER and PR and the medical oncologist says, what the heck, why didn't you order the ER before you sent me this patient? I think ultimately that's how this is going to be applied. At the present, you want to make sure the ER is positive before you order it, but I really hope surgeons will begin to adopt that so that the patients don't suffer that way.
I was thinking about a woman I interviewed recently for one of our programs who actually went out and bought a wig when she was diagnosed with breast cancer because she read about it and assumed she was going to get chemo, and she had an Oncotype and never got the chemo. Mark?
There's just maybe a few exceptions, I suppose, to the rule of ordering them reflexly on all of these cases. You know, for example, if you have a well-differentiated tubular or mucinous carcinoma, it's very unlikely that's going to come back in a high-risk stratum. Moreover, if you have HER2-amplified disease, in the retrospective analysis of B14 that Paik looked at, 100% of the FISH-amplified cases were either intermediate or high recurrence score. So it's very unlikely and wishful thinking to think you're going to get a low-risk score if you're HER2-amplified. Now, having said that, I agree with Pat that the assay has tremendous potential for limiting injudicious use of chemotherapy. And there was a very nice paper presented at San Antonio from, I believe, University of Pennsylvania at the last San Antonio meeting, where they just looked at their chemotherapy utilization at that institution in the pre-Oncotype era versus 2005-2006. And there was a dramatic reduction in order writing for adjuvant chemotherapy for these patients. So I think it's a very, very useful tool indeed.